that were asked to, like three or four of us at a time, that were asked to locate portals. Okay. They had problems that portals, that the endpoints used to be at a certain address or code, mm-hmm. were now just flailing out in open space now.
Okay. So they had a physical geolocality on the planet. Were they physically on the planet, or were they in the atmosphere of the planet, or
both?
Both. Okay, so you would find a geophysical location, and it would have a portal that would open up to some other.
Yeah, and some of them were like, kind of like where, like the Aurora Borealis. Mm-hmm. It was where magnetically the sun interacted with the atmosphere, mm-hmm. and it was over certain magnetic anomalies in the Earth.
Right. Okay.
And it had to do with the sun's behavior at the time, mm-hmm. and the position of the Earth. Things had to be just right, mm-hmm. for certain portals to be
operative.
Mm-hmm. And something was going on to where they were not operative, mm-hmm. on schedule, mm-hmm. and or the other side was not opening up where it was supposed to.
Okay. Did you know of any cases where people went into a portal and were lost?
Oh, in the beginning, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, people were, on the other side, were quite a mess.
Right. Like, sent someplace, yeah. So, trying to get the picture on the whole thing. Were there portals that were always open? Or did they, it was all tied into something?
Not unless it was artificially kept
open. Okay, right. So there were, but they did, I know there were attempts made, and there are, you know, according to a lot of the testimony, that there are some portals that have been kept open. Did you ever have
that? Would be, from what I remember, that would be a very bad thing.
Yeah.
It would destabilize the other portals, and something to do with the Earth's magnetic field and other.
Right.
It'd have a cascading effect.
Right. So this is why we've had things coming and going on the planet forever, I'm sure. You know, I mean.
Yeah, and these magnetic point-to-point portals, mm-hmm. and interdimensional doorways are not exactly the same thing.
Okay.
These interdimensional rips, mm-hmm. that I think some people are talking about, mm-hmm. that are left open, mm-hmm. are totally different.
Right.
And these kinds of things were opened by some of these dark magician practitioners way back, like in the 1980s through the 1940s.
Okay.
Like,
you mean the 1880s?
Yeah.
Turn of the century.
Yeah, 1880s. 18,
yeah, the 1880s turn of the century.
1940s.
The,
like,
uh-huh. I would call them the modern day sorcerers.
Like,
that were.
Yeah, like the Nazis and the pre-Nazi, mm-hmm. groups, and a lot of them. This is the stuff I heard from these Black Sun people.
Okay, they talked about that.
They knew already about my knowledge of portals and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And they were talking to me about what I knew about the dimensional rifts and, mm-hmm. passageways.
Mm-hmm.
And I told them not that much. I said, I mean, I knew they, mm-hmm. I knew what they were, they existed, and that some of the reptilian beings or whatever traveled that way.
Mm-hmm.
But I, you know, if there's some of them that are stuck open or whatever, that's not a good thing.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. So in the aspect of your further, just getting back to your life timeline here, so you went into, you didn't get to the military, you had the knee operation, right. Didn't know what to do.
It was much later that I got into the Texas State Guard.
Okay.
Yeah, they accepted me. It's the Texas Military Forces, and they accepted me into their command control communications and intelligence group, and I worked very closely with the Army National Guard, but mostly with the Air Force National Guard,
mm-hmm.
and with the secure satellite communications and that kind of stuff, mm-hmm. with them. And I made a lot of very good connections, worked very close with the Department of Homeland Security. I had to go to a lot of their, I had to get a lot of their certifications.
Mm-hmm.
The PAC-STAR 5500 satellite system that mm-hmm. I supported, which it was the DOD communications hub. It basically connected the Department of Homeland Security, all of the Department of Homeland Security mm-hmm. entities, local, all of the local police, first responders, and military together through one communication hub,
mm-hmm.
through whatever they were using, whether it be just a CB radio, a telephone, a satellite phone, ham radio, whatever, I would be able to pass them all together to where they could all speak to each other.
Right.
And also pull down the secure DOD internet that they had to where the Air Force and Army National Guard could come in and plug their encrypted laptops into the DOD infrastructure and communicate.
And during the time you were doing that, were you aware of the nature of this? I mean, did you, I mean, because it sounds like, well, we need communication between all these.
Oh, I found out. Oh, I sat there. I mean, I was sitting there working the thing. I found out all kinds of stuff.
What were you? You didn't write software. But you were doing the hardware.
Oh, I mean, I worked. It was basically just a whole bunch of hardware talking to mm-hmm. each other through switches, and there was some software involved, network connectivity, and keeping the satellite uplink connected. And then I helped the people with their encrypted laptops get connectivity to the network that we had, the little hub we had that was connected to the DOD satellite.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I supported them.
Department of Defense, DOD, right?
Yeah, and DHS.
Yeah, and Department of Homeland Security.
Yeah, whoever happened to be need to come into the tent, they had the clearance that needed to
have the information or have the.
Yeah.
Was it a secure network that?
Yeah. It was the DOD.
Right. So it was a closed network, and you were part of putting that all together to keep all of these different government agencies.
Right, and there was also people sitting around. You know, using phones. We had voice over IP phones
mm-hmm.
that we had plugged in, IP phones mm-hmm. that hooked into the DOD.
Did you have a special clearance?
I did, but I had a DOD card
mm-hmm.
that I never kept it with me.
Mm-hmm.
I never knew what my clearance was or anything.
Oh, no. Okay.
No.
So, but you had access to a lot of people.
Yeah. I had
a lot of data.
Special access program.
Okay. Right. So, during that stay there, how long were you working there?
I was in the Guard from 2007 to 2012.
Okay.
But
was that when you're in the Guard? Is that part time or?
Yeah, it's part time. Yeah. Just like whenever an emergency happens or during training.
So, I guess I would say that was part of your education or eye opening experiences. That
mm-hmm.
did you start to become aware of things there that you hadn't been previously aware of?
Mm. I was already aware. I just started getting a lot of information.
Okay.
And made a lot of connections.
Right.
A lot of some people I still talk to.
Uh-huh.
A lot of those people are the people that started disappearing. I mean, literally people calling me saying, "Hey, so and so didn't show up to work for the last 2 weeks. Their family said they went and looked in their window and their house is empty and it's a mess. It looks like they moved out in a very hasty manner."
Mm-hmm.
And neighbors said that they saw moving trucks
mm-hmm.
moving them out fast as hell and then whoosh, took off. Moved them out in less than 2 hours and
mm-hmm.
moved them out. No explanation, nothing.
Right. So the sensitivity of being in that particular arena and the information that was coming in, did you start to make conclusions about?
Yeah, I've made several conclusions,
uh-huh.
and then they've been wrong.
Oh, okay. And the people that you worked with, the general ethical, moral compass that they carry, are there a lot of, like, are there people that are working in this that have a lot of information right now that...
Oh, yeah.
And are they under threat to not talk? Or,
oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I got approached by some guys that told me I shouldn't be speaking so freely.
Mm-hmm.
Not too long ago, while I was living with my mom.
Mm-hmm. And they came to your house? They called?
No.
When I
was getting away from them, my situation there, I went to this shuck and jive place I go to every once in a while. Mm-hmm. And this guy sat down next to me, and he had Arabic written on one arm. He had a short sleeve shirt on. Another guy sat on the other side of me, and I looked at the guy's arm and I said, "Is that Arabic?" And he said, "Nope." And he pulled his sleeve down, and I said, "Hmm." I said, "You wouldn't happen to have anything written on the other arm, would you?" Because I'd met a guy who had Arabic on one arm and Sanskrit on the other.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, "Yeah." And he just lifted his shirt up real quick like that and put it down like that. And I said, "That's Sanskrit."
Mm-hmm.
He said, "How'd you know that?" I said, I knew a guy in the guard that had pretty much those same tattoos.
Mm-hmm.
And that opened it up, and the guy to the left said, "Oh, really?" He said, "You know, you should probably be a little less open on the internet."
Mm-hmm. Just like that.
Just like that.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't order anything to drink or anything. Then they got up and they left.
Mm-hmm. So this is a sort of a way of communication, right?
Yeah.
Symbols and signs and
tattoos. Very direct.
And,
yeah.
Yeah. Right. Letting you know who they are and delivering the message.
Yeah.
Did you feel threatened?
Put it this way, when I left, I took my pistol out of its sheath and put it under my leg,
mm-hmm.
and paid very close attention to other traffic and everything on the way home.
Okay. You know, I would say that was it. For a minute. Right.
So, I was... that, it got my attention.
Yeah. Have you had more of the same? Or
nope.
No. Right.
Yeah. Nothing else.
And do you, this is just an offhand question, but people you know without mentioning anybody, but are there people out there right now that wish they could come forward and speak more clearly? Are they still, like, you know, trying to pass the messages, say, subversively from one person to the next?
I think they would rather pass the buck, pass the info to someone they know, mm-hmm. that is putting the info out there.
Right.
But at the same time, their information is only as good as the person that they're getting it from.
Right.
So
they're compartmentalized still.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I have friends in several different groups,
mm-hmm.
and I get the information, and I kind of compare it. And if I have points that match, I consider the information somewhat vetted.
Mm-hmm.
Then I'll find a news story out there that has some of the information in it, and then I'll post it.
Right.
And that's my way of putting the information out there indirectly.
Right.
I'm not going to just come out and say da 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 da, because then whoever powers that be are going to be able to look and deduce exactly where I got the information mm-hmm. from.
Right. And put your source at risk also.
Yeah.
Right. Well, that's what I mean. I'm looking to a lot of people that are in the intel biz in a way, and it seems to be how they're doing it. They're kind of triangulating information. And
after I posted that stuff yesterday,
uh-huh.
the president of SAIC went to my site.
Okay. And what is SAIC? For the uninitiated.
It's one of the major computer defense contractors.
Uh-huh. Okay.
President at Defense Contractor.
Okay.
Frank O'Donnell. President at Defense Contractor.
Right.
Okay, we go there.
Uh-huh. National Security Executive.
SAI Science Applications International Corporation, uh-huh. SAIC.
Uh-huh.
They have been pursuing me like crazy
uh-huh.
to come and work on Navy contracts,
uh-huh.
which I've said no to. And, you know, it shows here that He viewed my profile 2 days ago.
Right.
After I posted some information on the portals and torsion field stuff.
Yeah. So just a, I mean, this is all very fascinating to me, as you well know. Like, you know, coming from myself, myself point of view of not having any training or apparently having no recall of military background. And yet, you know, it seems to me, and I know you have this broader, bigger picture too, where we're looking at a much, much, much bigger picture. It gets bigger all the time. And so, you know, we're looking at the origins of the human race. We're looking at other races from other distant planets or galaxies. We don't even know where. We're looking at interdimensional beings. We're looking at portals through time and space, artificial and natural ones. And, you know, all of these things. And I,
Not to mention all the breakaway societies that hung around from all the civilizations that have come and gone here on Earth.
Right. Plus AI technologies. Ancient technologies.
The AI is something that those in the space program and intelligence are very concerned about.
Okay. They're concerned in what way? I mean, are they're concerned of other AI presences? Is that they're not, the ones they're not writing, the codes they're not writing.
Right.
Right. So how is that being perceived right now?
As a very extreme and present danger, major threat. Okay. A lot of the current technologies have a mental component to interface. The air spacecraft or whatever. There's not a stick. Or, you know, things do not respond that quickly.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So it responds directly to the person's nervous system.
Mm-hmm.
Well, AIs, through computer usage, all kinds of different way, can have similar to entity attachments.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of like a virus.
Sure. In the AI, you've got this AI, and there's something else consciously.
Like a program.
In it, yeah. Running it, right.
Yeah, like a program that gets into a human being.
Right.
That lives in its electrical, in your electrical nervous system.
Uh-huh.
And after Stargate travel, after portal travel, before using or operating certain machinery, in the early days, they would use EEGs and other things to test, to make sure that your baseline EEG and other readings didn't have another reading over it.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And I don't know what they have now, but the last thing they had when I went in was a thing that went over your forehead like that.
Mm-hmm.
And they went over your forehead, they put it there until it beeped, and then they took it away, and there was a cool little screen on it and everything that showed the waves on a grid and all that, and they could tell if you had had any AI infections or whatever. And if you had, there's no way in hell you're getting anywhere near any of their tech.
Are you tying some dots together for me right now? But go ahead.
Because
we'll talk about it, yeah.
You had those IE parasites or whatever.
Uh-huh. Codes.
Codes in you, and you interface with the tech, then it gets into the device you're operating and can get into the network, which has a biological and electrical, it's like a biological I've seen them replace them. They're kind of like almost like things you would put in the freezer to get frozen and use like an ice pack.
They're kind of like silicone.
Gel packs.
Gel. Silicone.
Yeah. Yeah.
Could be silicone.
Yeah. But they're biological.
Right.
Like a lie.
Like a bio. Yeah. Well, just so you know,
but
we ran into some things similar
okay.
to that later.
But it's kind of like, it's biological and like, kind of like a, I guess, kind of like a brain or nervous system or whatever that they slide in and slide out and replace.
They can actually put them into the hardware.
Yeah.
So if you as a person, as a biological being, as a person, has any of these AI implanted I would just call them coats, for lack of a better word. They won't let you near anything because you are going to contaminate what they're trying to control.
You can bring down their defense grid systems and all that, and it's happened.
Right.
Yeah. And these, some of this biological, electrical components that they have in these spacecraft that we see flying around that we think are alien, that are not, or whatever, are what allow us to have the neurobiological tie-in to the technology to be able to do the things.
Okay, so we, let's just humans. Say government, human agencies, right, that are at the upper echelon of knowledge, let's call it that way, they actually have craft that are allowing certain human beings access or interface with different...
Yeah, they completely interface. They're, they're, I wouldn't say alive, but they're biological, they're somewhat alive.
So they're conscious in some level. They're conscious of what's happening around them. It's beyond the computer.
Yes,
it's
way beyond.
Okay, so they're AI, semi-biological beings. We could actually call them entities of a sort and say, are they independent? Or are they controlled? Are they giving? Are they? Do they have any autonomy?
I wouldn't say they're like the HAL 3000 or whatever, anything that, like that. But they self-monitor, they interface with the human, they monitor the human's health, they interface with the human so much, they like become one.
Okay.
And as a person, just almost before a person is thinking what they want to do, what weapon system they want to engage, what maneuver they want to do or whatever, the craft is already making the needed adjustments.
It's like
and
an extension of your body.
Yes.
Right. So the craft becomes your body extension.
Basically. Yeah.
Right. So you're managing it on that.
Yeah. It's almost like a prosthetic.
Right. So are they using this only for military, or is this being used in other ways?
I don't know. It has all kinds of applications that would help humanity.
Sure, of course. One thinks one immediately goes there, but it seems the predominant control mechanism of this right now is...
Yeah. Anyone that's in a wheelchair that has spinal damage, there's no reason for that.
Right, right.
I mean, with what they have.
Right.
People are suffering needlessly.
You, the person, the conscious human being, is now... been molded with this craft.
Melded is the right word.
Yeah. Can you, at that moment, you yourself override the input from this?
Well, yeah.
Could you take control, basically, and say...
Yeah, you're in control.
But could you, if you broke away from the whatever it is that's giving you that ability?
Well... We put it right when we said it is basically like a prosthetic.
Okay.
You are in control.
Mm-hmm.
Your mind is in control. It's just like having a prosthetic arm.
Right. But it's like, sort of like...
And it's plugged into your electrical system, and your mind is telling it to do this.
If you, let's say, became rogue, you went rogue to the system, and you decided, I'm going to do something totally different... Because at somewhere
there's other precautions for that.
I would say that there must be something that they can kind of unplug you there. That's what I'm asking. Yeah.
Yeah. There's what it is there's a it's a you are in this little thing that kind of plugs into the wider craft, like the fuselage.
Okay.
Then that plugs into the craft. You can be ejected from that at any point.
And right. There's something else monitoring you.
Yeah, and then that craft, then the larger craft has a return to home feature, and then that fuselage thing has a beacon and a short range travel.
Have you been told about this? Have you seen it?
I've seen it.
You've RV'd it.
No,
you've seen them.
I've I haven't been on the large, big, cigar-ish looking.
The ones that are on the forum also, right?
No, I've seen them.
Okay.
I've been on the smaller ones that are kind of squished down and have double, look like. I've been on other ones. I've been on the big triangles. I've been on them.
How do you get transported, or how does that happen? How does one find themselves? And were you trained that way, or is this like you sitting on the couch with me, or is this some other aspect of?
Well, there's also an aspect of having avatars. Some of the people have avatars that look like the grays. Some of the gray encounters people have are just biomechanical robot things mm-hmm. that someone is in a kind of like a recliner kind of thing. Sitting there with, there's things on each side. I mean, they're sitting there doing mm-hmm. like this, you know, controlling them mm-hmm. with wraparound visors on.
Right.
And I mean, people say they don't get in. It feels like there's no feeling or soul to these. They're not. They're machines.
Mm-hmm.
And some of these. I mean, there's so many of these different beings out there that people confuse with. Or what call grays or whatever,
right.
You know. But those ones that are all smooth and look a certain way are military built
biopods.
Yeah, kind of like that movie Avatar.
Right. Yeah.
You know, and they're controlled by people, you know, nowhere near.
Right.
And you know, the craft they're on is a drone. And avatars or drones, I mean, it's all drone.
Mm-hmm.
And
do you have an opinion on when? And because you said, you know, your own feelings about this military abduction and all that stuff started happening in the 50s. And, you know, most people now are, you know, very aware of Roswell and the first supposed crash and all of that. And as a program, who's running it? Who's at the top of the...
Oh, jeez.
And we can stop anytime you want to.
No, I mean, that question, that's... I've looked at that pyramid so many times,
mm-hmm.
and every time there's so many people with their arrogances and... that think they're at the top of the pyramid, and I find out that they're like nowhere near these Black Sun cult people, just because basically they run the Fed, they run the Babylonian money magic system.
Mm-hmm.
They do.
Yeah.
It's the Black Sun cult.
Yeah.
They run it. They think
through that, black magic.
Yeah.
Yeah, money is black magic.
It is.
Yeah.
They went into detail talking about that.
Yeah. We could maybe hold that one on the side.
I know. Like I said, I don't know where to start.
I know. So, but we have, I'm seeing that, you know, we'll continue through this part of it.
Yeah. Who's controlling all this? Hell if I know.
Mm-hmm.
Ultimately, it's not, it's off-world.
Mm-hmm.
But when you talk about people, you know, there's definitely some bloodline. There's a bloodline thing going on.
Okay. Now that becomes a whole other interesting to delve into bloodlines and to try to understand what is a bloodline and what does that mean and why do we have so much attention on it. I mean, I think we're looking through multiple scenarios right now, and somehow they all feed back to each other.
And the bloodline all feeds up to off-world.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And they're basically some sort of mixture.
Right.
We're all mixtures.
We're all mixtures. Yeah. That's something I just, you know.
and there's been, you know, I was debriefed and talked and told about meetings that we had with all these other groups that had come in, and just about every group that came in claimed that they had a hand in our creation.
Right.
you know? So at the beginning, the American military was extremely indignant and pissed off because they were very, a lot of them were still very Judeo-Christian kind of people, you know, and these aliens were coming in saying they created us, da-da-da-da-da. But, like, there were, like, dozens of races, supposedly, that were coming in, different races.
How were you debriefed? Were you in meetings?
Yeah. I mean, there were, like, I've been in a bunch of different situations to where it was, like, big meetings, almost like a miniature kind of like UN kind of thing with people sitting around talking about stuff.
A conference sort of setting. And
with me sitting, looking and reading off of kind of like a tablet kind of thing, reading what they're talking about because I didn't understand. They weren't speaking English. Okay. You know. So and there's always someone sitting there doing a sign language that wasn't regular sign language. It was a sign language that looked more Native American to me.
So, and in these meeting spaces, there were military, U.S., other country military, too?
Yeah, I didn't see a whole lot of military. It looked more like a lot of civilian-looking people.
Statesman type, or?
Yeah, and some mainly humans, but strange-looking humans. Strange-looking humans.
So, yeah, so it was discussed that these varying races that had been coming onto the planet all had something to do with the human creation.
I remember there were some humans there. There were several women with one man that had dark black hair. And when I say olive complexion, I'm talking they look just like olives. Like
greenish.
Green. Like, look like olives.
Okay.